Welcome to Pagan Coffee Talk. Here are your hosts, Oswin and Lord Knight.
Today's topic is group thinking versus individuality.
How do you describe group think compared to individual thinking? You know, I guess this is that question of, do you go along with the crowd just because? Are you agreeing with us right now just because you're listening to us?
Right. That's kind of what I'm thinking. It's group thinking is, it's that whole, I guess in some ways it's kind of like peer pressure.
True. But now here's a question for you. You also have the mob mentality, where the mob suddenly starts to behave a certain way because one person did. Kind of like standing in a line, because the person in front of you move, you move.
Right.
You don't really think about it.
Well, there's a story you like to tell that's related to that, and it's, you've seen it happen. We've all seen it happen at some point. You've got a large group of people going down the street.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
One person up front makes a right-hand turn.
So everybody else turns.
Everybody else is going to follow along with them because they think that's where they're supposed to go.
Right. It's the whole pride, or, well, any parade march. You're literally, there's one, there's a parade master. You're following them. And then during some of these things, during some of these marches, especially when it's political and they're doing it for people from other groups, will try to get up front to take that lead position and start guiding people down different roads that they're not supposed to. My understanding, this actually happened during Occupied Wall Street.
I believe it did, yeah.
There was another group protesting something. People from the Wall Street protest, whatever, the bank protest, literally got in front of this group and took them to the same place.
Right.
But that's not where they were marching to.
Right.
I mean, come on, think about it. Like, when you're going to places like the Renaissance Fair, right?
Mm-hmm.
Before it opens, everybody sort of gathers up front. There's no line. There's no real here, whatever. There might be some people forming in a line to first get in, but nobody moves until, like, that first person moves.
Right.
I've seen them open the doors and nobody come near them until they can get that first person to move.
Right.
You know, but again, you also see the same thing. Again, another example of groupthink is, think Black Fridays.
Mm-hmm.
People think a store is open or something, and then everybody starts to surge forward.
Right.
This is groupthink. We all do this.
So it's like a herd mentality.
Right. And actually, I think that's what it's left over from when we were more, before the dream time, when we were more animal than we were human.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, that is a leftover from it. You know, you see the same behavior slightly in, like, pack animals on the hunt and prowl and stuff like that. But again, you start to see this behavior of individual thing too, in like a wolf pack. They can all run together. They can all hunt together. But as soon as they get to the point of making the kill, it's like each of the wolves suddenly go into more of a individual think. They strike when they think they're ready, not when their leader says. So how do we shut that off? How do we stop ourselves from doing that group think where we could actually be led to our demise so easily, you know, like the sheep over the edge or the fool?
I don't know. Can we shut that off?
Well, it seems like it. I mean, is it a lack of questioning? Well, why? Why am I following this person? Why do I think this person is leading us somewhere?
Why am I doing this particular behavior?
Right. But when do we shut it off? When do we actually activate it? Because we've all been in those. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but that's what I'm wondering. Can we really shut it off? I mean, I think at some point it just gets activated. We might can shut it off afterwards.
Well, see, now here's the question. Is this a learned behavior or is this a biological behavior?
Well, I think in some ways it's both. I think it's kind of an innate behavior that we have. But I think over the years, that innate part is less.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of
what we've learned.
There's a lot of things that we do on a daily basis and don't think about it.
Right. And
certain things we can control, certain things we don't. Hey, like we cannot control our heart. Well, with enough meditation and stuff, you can learn how to calm your heart down and stuff like this. Yes.
Right.
But you can stop your breathing, but you don't think about breathing when you're doing it on a moment-to-moment basis.
Right.
It's kind of like blinking your eyes. You don't think of, well, you probably aren't right now because I said it. But you don't think about blinking your eyes. It just happens.
Right.
So again, is this one of those behaviors that, like you said, yeah, we could stop it if we wanted to, but it might take us a little while to realize what we're doing.
Yeah. But no, in some cases, I think it is a learned behavior. But like I said before, I think it's like the blinking of the eyes. It's just, it's something that happens.
Right.
We can control it at some point, but
to some extent.
Right. So I think it's something that we can turn off afterwards, but I don't think it's something we can just, like a light switch, turn it on and off.
Okay. But that doesn't explain riots, mobs, lynchings. And the reason I mention these, even though I'm not mentioning them because they're horrific. I mention them because they require more actions than just walking into a theater or right. being guided down a road. You see what I'm saying? There's a little bit different there, but I see the same behavior even in higher
cognitive
things going on there. I mean, I'm sorry, when you're lynching somebody and you're stringing them up, you have to think, oh, we got to get a rope. Oh, we have to tie this specific type of knot. Do you see what I'm saying? There's a lot more thought that we require individual thought over group think like we're talking about.
Well, yeah, but if you're doing something like that, I hate to be this way. You've already planned all that shit out. You already got that rope tied.
Let's refer back, because I know some people.
Because that's not a spontaneous thing.
But, well, let's think about it like this. Remember that we mentioned in that show, 1883 or something, where at the beginning of the show, a guy winds up pickpocketing, a kid yells, pickpocket, and the next thing you know, that guy's like being strung up and the whole town's on it.
True.
This is groupthink. This is mob mentality.
Right.
So again, does mob mentality release us from responsibility of our actions?
No.
But yet when you're doing it, you're thinking as a group.
Right.
If the rest of the people wouldn't do it, you wouldn't do it.
Oh, that's not necessarily true, but if you let yourself, you still have to be responsible because you're letting yourself get swept up in those emotions into that whole riot mob mentality. You've allowed yourself to be in that situation.
Okay. They did an experiment. All right. In which they got people to sit into a room and do some paperwork. And these people were getting paid for it. Well, what they did was they faked a fire. And as long as the person was alone, the majority of the times the person would get up, fill the door, try to call for help, do everything that they're supposed to do.
Okay.
Then they did the experiment again, but then they put a group of people in there, like three or four people, right?
Mm-hmm.
What wound up happening was nobody would do anything. They just sat there and kept on doing the work because nobody wanted to break that confines of what the world was going on. Nobody wanted to stand out. Nobody wanted to be different. Nobody. Do you see what I'm saying? So can we really break out of it?
Huh.
I mean, I like to believe that some people can and some people can't. I think it really does depend on the person and their personality to some extent.
Right. More outgoing people are more likely to break away from that than, say, an introvert.
Right. All right. Does it mean that the more outgoing person won't behave like an introvert and go with the group?
Okay.
Do you see what I'm saying? So again, is it something we can really break out of? Is peer pressure really that important to us?
Well, I don't think it's that important. I just think it's that powerful.
Well, again, that makes me think there's something innate inside of us that's more biological that wants acceptance from other people if we act like everybody else will be accepted like everybody else.
Well, there's that, yes.
So I'm not sure. Because again, like I said, I've seen groupthink and I've seen individual things. I've seen the person who, where they finally can, that it does happen. There's a person that does get up and suddenly go, no, this is wrong. Stop. They do occur.
Right. But even then, that person doesn't necessarily have enough sway or influence to change the outcome of that situation. But the fact is that they broke away from that whole mob mentality.
What
so it is possible.
Right. It is possible. Now, the real question is what gives certain people the ability to do this? What kind of thinking, what kind of processing going on there? Because a lot of us would like to sit. I would love to sit here and go, oh, no, that wouldn't be me. But I can't say that.
No, because it very well could be.
It very well could be. You know, I've done jobs. I've ran a department of 104 people. Trust me, groupthink can sometimes be an advantage to you when you're trying to get a task accomplished.
Sure it can, yeah.
You know, but other times it's kind of like, you can think for yourself. You don't need me to figure out problems.
Well, I think there's a couple of things. One, I think it does seem to be the more extroverted people. Those are who are more outgoing.
Right.
They seem to have that ability to be able to think more for themselves. And I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but.
Or is it that their moral standards is to a point to where, this is not right. I have to stop it because this isn't the way we should be behaving.
Well, see, I think that plays an important part too, because that's kind of where I was going. I don't think that just because you're more outgoing, that's the only thing.
Right.
Even introverts, even those who are the quote unquote shy people, have morals and ethics.
Right.
And that has been enough for those type of people to stand up and do something.
Right.
Outside of the whole herd. Mob riot mentality.
Well, and again, this sort of brings me to mind of the whole entire thing where we were asking, which would you rather have? Would you rather have somebody look at you and show you respect because they respect you as an individual,
mm-hmm.
or because you're holding some threat over them that they're going to get in trouble if they don't treat you this way?
Yeah, no, I think if you're doing the threat, then you're not getting actual respect.
No. No, but again, our mindset there is to, why does it seem like we have to have or want to force people into approving of us? Our own self-worth isn't enough.
Right. In other words, if we don't believe enough in ourselves.
Right.
And that's pretty much what's causing us to reach out for that acceptance from our peers.
Right. I mean, we're not talking about the whole so-called smart thing that most smart people don't say anything because they're questioning what they know to begin with. You know, they're right. Smart enough to know what they don't know and then question themselves on it. So they just keep quiet.
Right.
Because we want acceptance. So like I said, I'd like to know what in the world it is that gives that certain people that ability to go, no, that is wrong. Don't do that.
I don't know. I'm sure there's been a study somewhere. Maybe we'll have to look that up and post a link to it.
Because part of me also wants to think that this is also part of that whole entire where they do a survey of people driving about mm-hmm. their driving, and everybody rates themselves slightly above.
Right.
But the truth of the matter is everybody's average.
Right.
That's like me. I'm an average priest. I'm nothing. Ooh, you know?
Right.
I'm not no multi-generational. I'm not, I'm just your average little priest. I'm just an average little priest, witch, priest, whatever. And why is that so hard for us to accept?
See, I don't know. I mean, I don't, I think it's because I think a lot of us are overachievers. If we don't put forth the confidence that we are the better person, quote unquote, better person, then we feel like we have failed ourselves.
But somebody has to be average.
Well, sure.
All right. I mean, again, it's the whole entire thing of if you go around and calling everybody special, nobody's actually special.
Right. Then, too, it's not that we're not good at something. Everybody's no. good at something. Somebody can be better than average at something.
At something.
But there's nothing wrong with just being average. But I don't know where that whole mentality comes from that we feel like we can't just be average.
Well, again,
I don't know where it comes from.
For some reason, in my mind, this all leads back to having people to accept us.
Okay.
Do you see what I'm saying? That all these behaviors are really nothing more than I have to be verified or get someone, I need someone else's approval for me to be me. It seems what all this comes down to.
But so the question is where does that come from?
Doubt, not actually believing in what in the world you can actually do. You know,
self-confidence,
self-confidence. You know, I'm sure it all comes from, you know, a lot of self-doubt.
So it's a validation issue.
Yeah.
We can't self-validate what we do. Therefore, we have to have validation from other people.
From other people.
If we don't have that validation, then
we're not that.
Right.
We're not as good as we think.
Okay.
Do you see what I'm saying? This is where in my head, and again, I could be wrong. I keep on seeing the same pattern. Mm-hmm. It all seems to come down to humanity or humans overall want to be accepted by those around them. It's an innate part of our personality, of our driving force. I think it's a very basic emotion that we have to fulfill.
Do you think that social media is playing a big role in that now in this day and age where everything, everybody's out for that like, everybody's out for that subscriber, everybody's out for...
I think social media is taking advantage of that because it is just, again, it's one of them things that we do is, I don't think it's necessarily something we can completely control.
Okay.
Nobody died from holding their breath.
Well,
you know what I mean? Your body, we've all done it as kids in the whole nine yards.
Right.
No parents ever worried about this because we already know your body will not let you do this to yourself.
Right.
Like this. Just going,
right.
You know, I'm not talking about the ones that, anyway. Does that make sense? So I don't think it's anything that anybody can 100% escape. I think we will all fall into it at some point. I don't think there's any one person out there that would never fall for it. Does that make sense?
Right. But we do have the ability to analyze the situation.
And break free of it. And
right.
Because I've seen where in the world it does happen up into higher forms there. You know what I mean? This group thing. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about higher emotions create better memories.
I was taught this lesson by Lord Man when I was learning how to cast circle.
Okay.
Basically, he got me all riled up. Mm-hmm. I was pretty pissed off. And then he told me to do my quarter calls one more time, and I actually got them all right. And yeah, okay. After that point, I actually did start to memorize that eat more easier. It doesn't have to be a bad emotion. It doesn't have to be anger per se. The idea there is the higher the emotional level,
mm-hmm.
the greater the memory imprint in the brain.
All right. Why?
They're defining moments in our lives, I guess. They actually define who we are, our personalities, how we handled it, what in the world was going on at the time.
Okay. So is this something we can control?
I don't think so. I think it's something we can manipulate to our advantage. If you can get yourself, if you could heighten your emotions while studying, I don't know, quantum mechanics or philosophy, or pick your most boring subject, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you could get a more higher emotion there, the likelihood is you'll remember the information better.
Okay, but you're saying if you can.
If you can.
So is it feasible that we can do this?
Well, we do it with magic.
How might we go about doing that?
Well, we do it with magic all the time.
Well, sure, yeah.
We tap into something that will, just like actors do, and they want to cry, they tap into something that, or they do a flash of memory through their minds of something that made them really, really sad.
Right.
We're talking the same concept here. So yes, it is something you can control. You can learn how to control.
Okay. I'm just trying to figure out how this could benefit.
What do you mean?
What might be some examples of creating better memories?
Well, it depends on, do you want to pass the test? You know, I have told people for a number of years that when you study something, and you're, especially if you're going to be like quizzed on it at some point, so you're going to be in school, mm-hmm. the best bet is to study. And then when you go to your meditation, go back over the information while you're in a meditative state, because you're more connected with your subconscious at this point. Well, that's where our emotions come from, our subconscious.
True.
So when we're in high states of emotions, our subconscious is more active. So we will have a better memory of it, because this is where we store all this stuff. With your job, y'all normally do those morning meetings, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We have a department and huddle, if you will.
Yeah, huddle. Yeah. Okay. Huddle. All right. And how often do you actually remember any of that crap? Besides, are we getting raises?
not very often.
Because you're sitting there and you're like, so you don't remember them. Being the supervisor and having to get this, and, you know, working with housekeepers and stuff like this, you know how many of these housekeepers will come up to you later and go, hey, you know, in the morning meeting, you mentioned something about this or blah, blah, blah. You know, mm-hmm. I got a question. But why didn't you ask during the morning meeting? I didn't even realize you were talking.
Right.
So again, our emotional state seems to be directly related to how well we remember something. Now, for all that said and done, why do we seem to have a hard problem with people remembering what they look like or picking people out of a lineup who's been attacked by somebody?
Well, I think in something like that, it's such a traumatic event that the brain's trying to block that information out.
Maybe.
But is there a way that we can tap into that and use that to help us remember those details?
So you're sitting there saying that maybe sometimes that the emotions can be so overwhelming that we just don't remember it all?
Yeah. We either don't remember or it kind of blurs together. Yeah.
because the subconscious is overstimulated at some point.
Right. It's trying to calm down that.
The reason why in the world someone who goes into, what do they call it, the blind rage, and they don't remember what they did?
Mm-hmm.
That berserker state.
Yeah, the berserker state.
Which makes you wonder, you know, I have to ask this question on the berserkers, all right? Not that I want to digress, but how did they control them? I'm serious. You got a guy going out there freaking nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be his comrade in arms, all right? I'm going to be standing on the field somewhere else.
Yeah, I'm going to be far away.
So I wonder, how did they keep these berserkers from attacking their own in battle?
I don't know.
Because you got to remember, back in these days, it wasn't like one side wore one color and the other side wore the different.
Like the red coats. Little American history there.
They did not color coordinate this, all right?
No.
There was not some gay guy going around going, oh, girls. We can't be having these. Right. No. We can't tell what in the world's going on. So
it wasn't. Right. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, in American history, the North and the South, when in the Civil War, they were two different colors. You could tell who was who.
Well, I hate to be this way, but even then, there probably was a point to where in the world there wasn't always enough uniforms.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Unless they were outside,
into that.
You know, again, if they were inside your regiment, you know, I mean, it's like nowadays, all armies across the world do that whole camouflage thing.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't no big, military secret thing here, all right?
Right.
How much friendly fire happens on this?
I'm sure quite a bit.
Thanks for listening. Join us next week for another episode. Pagan Coffee Talk is brought to you by Life Temple and Seminary. Please visit us at lifetempleseminary.org for more information, as well as links to our social media. Facebook, Discord, Twitter, YouTube, and Reddit.
We travel down this trodden path, a maze of stone and mire. Just hold my hand as we pass by a sea of blazing pyres. And so it is the end of our days, so walk with me till morning breaks. And so it is the end of our days, so walk with me till morning.